Failure is not an option.
What difference at this point does it make?
Nobody said it was going to be fun.
This is Real Talk, a fearless, poignant, and intrepid show where truth speaks louder than words. This is Real Talk with your host, Audrey Russo.
The shame, not of this world, so we live on the run. We keep our eyes set, on what is to come.
It happened before. It will happen again. It's just a question of when.
Time's a luxury we don't have. Hey, everybody, this is Anson Williams. You might remember me from Happy Days. Well, I am very, very proud to have been on Audrey Russo's Real Talk. What a great show. What a great lady. What a great time.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, this is Audrey Russo, and you're listening to Real Talk. Well, it's the spring-summer season for theater in New York, and we're about to get the lowdown on what's hot and what's not on and off-Broadway with my next guest. For my new listeners, Lauren Yarger is a syndicated reviewer for Broadway and off-Broadway theater in New York and professional theater in Connecticut for Reflections in the Light, the Connecticut Arts Connection, and BroadwayWorld.com. She is a voting member of the Drama Desk, the Outer Critics Circle, and the American Theater Critics Association. She's a member of the League of Professional Theater Women and co-founder of its Connecticut chapter. Lauren is also a producer and playwright member of the Dramatist Guild of America, and she's a book reviewer for Publishers Weekly and a member of the National Book Critics Circle. It's my great pleasure to give a Real Talk welcome back to my friend Lauren Yarger. Yay! Welcome back, Lauren.
Audrey.
You have no idea. I always look forward to your visit to the show.
Well, thank you. I always enjoy talking with you. We always have such a fun time chatting theater.
Yes. And that's what we're going to do right now. So let's give us the lowdown. What do we have coming at us for the spring and summer?
We have quite a lot, actually. We're right, as we are doing this recording, we're sort of coming into the very busy season, and so I'm going to highlight some of the shows that I have seen, but there are a lot coming up that I haven't seen yet because they're still to open in the big end-of-season rush that we have. As it is every year, we have these tons of shows in April open because they want to get in under the Tony Award deadline and in under the deadline for the Outer Critics and the Drama Desk. So that's all at the end of April. So we have like every show in your imagination opening all at once. So I can't tell you about all of those yet because I haven't seen them, but the ones that I have seen, I can talk about some of the more popular ones that we've seen so far this spring. Last we talked about how the plays the thing this year. We had some really good plays in the fall. And that continues to be the case as we continue in this season. Almost every play that I see, I'm really enjoying. It's really well done. It's a really, really rich season for plays. And that's exciting because the emphasis so much, as you know, is on the musicals, especially with star people in them.
Right.
You know, and that seems to be driving Broadway quite a lot these days. And you know, obviously the musicals have always been popular and bring in the audiences, and the plays not so much, but this year we really have had a lot. The number of plays has been, you know, really a lot for a season, and then again, all of them have just been really, really very good. So that's been exciting about this season. Now, the musicals coming, I'm not so sure. Or just a couple of them, but some of them not so much. So it's an interesting, it's a twist of the season for me. Usually the musicals are all the big deal, and this year, I don't know, not so much. I'm going to just highlight one play. There are, again, several. I spend some time this time on a couple of musicals, because we did last time, we spent time on plays, but one in particular I thought your listeners probably are interested hear about is the new take on To Kill a Mockingbird. It stars Jeff Bridges as Atticus Finch, and it's written by Aaron Sorkin, who a lot of people really like. You know, his work on West Wing and some other movies has sort of given him a place in the writing community. You kind of know when you're watching something by Aaron Sorkin, it's probably going to be very well written, there's going to be very good dialogue, that type of thing. So he has adapted Harper Lee's story for the stage. Now, there have been other adaptations, of course, the movie with Gregory Peck, everyone, you know, pretty much knows that and loves it. The book itself is a favorite with many people. It won a Pulitzer back in the 60s, and I think it was 1960 when it came out. And it's a favorite book of so many people that I know. It's like if you ask them what one of their top favorite books is, they're going to name To Kill a Mockingbird. There was a stage version of it that has been done a number of times. I saw it a couple of years ago here in Connecticut. That was really quite good, too. It was very true to the book. So the idea for this one is that they want to bring it a little bit into the current time. Take the datedness out of it, if they could. And it was interesting because before Harper Lee died, she did approve the adaptation by Aaron Sorkin, that she approved his doing this. But then after she died, the estate had some issues with what he had done to modernize it. They tried to stop the production.
Really?
The courts ruled in the favor of the production, and was able to go forward and open the schedule. And it really, it is a little bit different take. I would say it's not untrue to the book and to the story, but it really has changed sort of the framework of it a little bit to make it a little more appealing to today's audiences. So some of the more significant things that he's done, I'm not going to go through the story. I'm assuming most people know the story of To Kill a Mockingbird, about a lawyer who's defending an African-American man in the Old South. He's been accused of rape, and he has not done it, but no one will defend him except Atticus Finch steps forward and will do that, much to the dismay of most of the townspeople around him. So he takes on the case, but the book is told from the viewpoint of his young daughter, who's, I believe, 6. Gouch is his little girl, and she's telling the story. In this particular adaptation on the stage, she's still telling the story, but she's an adult, and the role is played by Celia Keenan-Bolger. And also the other kids involved, her brother and their friend who visits, are also adults. She's telling the story sort of in a memory, explaining how it happened, but then steps into the scene as this young girl. And I know that there are some people who really struggled with this, and I think it's because if you know the story and you really enjoy her being a young child telling the story, it's very difficult to see an adult doing that and to play the younger role. For me, it did not bother me at all. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was an interesting take in it. It gave it a different perspective. It made more sense to me. You'd be hearing it from an adult scout telling the story and remembering how it happened than to be hearing it from a young perspective. So I particularly liked it. The other thing he kind of updated is the housekeeper, Calpurnia, is played by LaTonya Richardson Jackson. And it's not really very different. She's still the housekeeper, but she's much more able to express herself. And so that role, even though it's a smaller role in the storytelling, becomes very significant And we hear her express some opinions that sort of make the story for us. In addition to the fact that I think Aaron Sorkin has sort of put more spotlight on Atticus himself, and he also is not so much a mystery, or we're not so sure where his motivation comes from, exactly where he's coming from. Other people help him explain that, I think, in the book and in other adaptations, but in this we hear from him directly. So there's great dialogue between him and Calpurnia, and it helps with the storytelling that way too. So it's just it's very well done. It's directed by Bartlett Scherr, who is usually the resident director up at Lincoln Center. So he directed the King and I revival that was up there in Oslo, which was a great play. Right. He's very talented, so he gets a great deal of really good performances out of this strong ensemble, and the very smaller parts, seem very significant. And it's not just let's just have one person tell the story or just put the focus on one person. It's the whole ensemble bringing to light what the issues are that are being dealt with and why the people feel the way they do and why they're motivated the way they are. So I think it's very well done. Again, if you're a diehard fan of the book and you want it exactly like the book, then maybe this isn't for you.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I think you'll enjoy the way the story is told and the performances, which are very, very good. So that's out there if people are coming into New York and wondering what play they should see. That's definitely one option. I've seen two musicals now. Again, there's a bunch of them out there, but we don't have time for them all, I know. We'll highlight the ones we can. There's one. This is going to be funny. Your listeners are going to say, seriously, you're recommending this? But yes, there is an off-Broadway production of Fiddler on the Roof. And when I first heard about this, it was in another production, also off-Broadway. And it's in Yiddish.
Wow.
So the entire dialogue and all of the songs are sung in Yiddish. And it's presented with subtitles, but in English and Russian. When I first heard about it, I thought, oh, seriously? Because, how many times can you possibly see Fiddler? I just, I've seen it so many times. I love it. It's a wonderful musical, and I love the score. It's one of those, I've seen it on stage. I don't know how many times. Everybody has been in Fiddler at some point in their high school. It's so often done. And we just had a revival not maybe 2 years ago on Broadway.
Right.
And before that, we had one maybe 5 years before that on Broadway. And, it just like, how many times, seriously, can you see Fiddler? And I didn't see it in that production that was the first off-Broadway production. But I kept hearing from colleagues, that it was so great. You need to see the Yiddish Fiddler. And I thought, no, I really don't. And we just have so many shows that we have to see that it's hard to, find a slot to see something I've seen 100 times. And so they moved it because it was selling out at another location. They moved it to a larger theater, also off-Broadway. But I kept hearing so much about it that it reminded me a lot of some years ago there was a revival of Our Town that was off-Broadway. And I had the same reaction. I like the play, but how many times can you possibly see Our Town, really? And everybody was telling me it was the best version of Our Town they'd ever seen. I had to get to this show and see it. And I finally gave in, and I went and saw it. And it, seriously, was one of the best theater experiences I've ever had in my life. It was the best Our Town ever. I've just never seen anything like it. Blew me out of my seat. So it was reminding me so much of that I thought, I better go see this, because it's the same kind of feedback that I'm hearing, that it's the best Fiddler you've ever seen. So I went and I saw it, and oh my gosh, I could not believe how good this was.
Wow.
Again, it's Yiddish, so you think, well, how can you even follow along? But when you've seen Fiddler 100 times, and you know the story, which most of us do,
yeah,
it's not hard So if you kind of lose exactly what's happening, if you're not that familiar with it, the subtitles are there, project it right onto the backdrop. So you just glance over and see what that dialogue was if you didn't quite follow what was happening. Most of the songs, again, I can sing those songs almost by heart, as most of them can. So, again, it wasn't a problem, but there they are. The lyrics are right there. The guy who plays Tevia, his name is Steven Skybell. Mm-hmm. The best Tevia I've ever seen.
Really?
Oh, my gosh. And I've seen Zero myself. I mean, I've seen a lot of stuff that are very good. This guy was Tevia to me. He just was.
Wow.
It's the best relationship between Tevia and Golda that I've ever seen. You totally get that they care for each other, they love each other, they drive each other crazy, they've been married so long, they've had these children together. I mean, it's like the most natural pairing of those two that I've ever seen. Jackie Hoffman plays the matchmaker, Yenta. She is amazing. She's so funny. If you know Jackie Hoffman from her other roles, she kind of has this persona, and she's known for her comedy, and she kind of has a personality that comes out. That's not the case here. Excellent direction by Jill Gray has kept that contained and formed the whole character with her talent, and it's really a delight to watch. The whole thing just so perfect. It was like one of the most near perfect productions I've ever seen of anything. The set is by Beowulf Bort, who's a genius. I love his work on anything he does, but in this particular case, it's really very simple. Everything is very minimal, and the set is four panels of sort of like parchment-looking paper, and through it says "Fora" in the middle of one of the panels, and it's just so significant that the Fora surrounds this community and sort of towers over as the action happens.
Wow.
And at one point, when the Russian soldiers come and they wreak some havoc within the village, they tear the Torah, and it's just heart-gripping. You know, it's just a simple thing. It really is, but you're just so into this. I don't know how to describe it, except that you feel like it's personally happening to you. And the whole thing is on that personal level. Every single story has new meaning to me. When I was watching, I felt so engaged with it all. I literally teared up at Sunrise Sunset. I mean, again, how many times can you see this? And I just felt for these people. I just felt like I was part of their community, that these were people I knew, not just characters in a story.
Now, that's great theater. That's great theater.
Yeah. So I don't know if you've got, listeners who were naive like I was, thinking, oh, I've seen it all, I've seen it so many times, I don't need to see Fiddler again. This is the Fiddler you need to see. I mean, seriously, I felt like in some ways that this is the Fiddler I've been waiting for all through those other ones. It was like all those other Fiddlers led me to this one somehow. I don't know. It was a really wonderful experience. It's, 3 hours of sheer bliss. I just can't recommend it more highly. So like I said, it's kind of silly that I'd be recommending Fiddler, but I am. And if this, I would say that if this were a Broadway production, if for some reason they had brought this to a Broadway theater, this would win for Best Revival for the Tony Award, because it's that good.
Wow.
It just happens to be off-Broadway, which means a little bit cheaper ticket price. So that's a good thing for people who want to go see it as well. Very good. Very good.
I want to see it now.
It's really wonderful. I have to say, I recommended it very highly, and I did have a friend who went to see it, and she really did not like it. Really didn't like it at all. So I guess I can't promise that Everyone will love it, but for me, it was a really wonderful theater experience. And like I said, most everybody, all of my colleagues who are critics, love it. I can almost guarantee you this will be nominated for Outer Critics and Drama Desk and could possibly win Revival. Certainly some of the performances will be nominated. I mean, it's that good.
Wow.
So take a chance.
I will. I love it. Yeah, I've seen, you know, coming from a Jewish background, I've seen, but you know what? I'm open to it, especially because I know a little bit of Yiddish, so that would be fascinating to see that.
You know, what was really fun was that this particular translation is by a person named Shraga Friedman. Don't know anything about that person. Sorry, can't give you background. But when I was looking at some of the translation being projected, Some of it's just a little bit different because, again, I know this musical pretty much by heart. So, you know, in the opening number when they're talking about, you know, they don't have a lot of controversy in the town except one time, you know, the person delivered a mule instead of a horse, and they go back and forth about, oh, it was a mule, it was a horse, it was a mule. It's a goat, a she-goat or a he-goat. You know, so you see these little subtle differences in what they're actually saying, you know, in this translation, which was kind of fun. I enjoyed that. There's not a lot of major differences, but every once in a while you catch something like that, and you can say, aha, see, I'm an expert on Fiddler, I know.
You know. Yeah. I love it.
Very fun. I really enjoyed that. It was the kind of musical that I sat through, and then I thought, I'd like to see that again. I could go back.
Wow, really? Wow, that's something.
Yeah, definitely. So highly recommend that. And then the next one I want to highlight as we chat here about what I've seen so far is the big ticket of the season, the hot ticket, Be More Chill. This is a phenomenon season on Broadway. It actually had a run off Broadway earlier this season, completely sold out. They moved it to Broadway. This show is it defies all normal definition on just about every level. It started back in New Jersey. It's written, the music and lyrics are written by Joe Iconis. They had a run in New Jersey some years ago, and they did a cast recording of that performance. And recently, that recording was released, was streamed out on the internet. And young people love this thing. And they started downloading the recording so that 200 million streams of this recording have already happened before it ever got to Broadway. And it's this phenomenon. It's like a word-of-mouth thing. The kids download this song, and then they love them, and then they download the album, and they tell their friends, and it just became this sort of cult thing. So when they opened off Broadway, it was sold out. It's very much along the lines of Hamilton in terms of that, because that's what happened with Hamilton, too. The recording was out there. The soundtrack was out. People knew the soundtrack and had been listening to Hamilton without ever having seen the show.
Wow.
They just loved it. And the word of mouth got passed down, and it's that kind of a thing. It's a very young person kind of show. So I have seen it, and it's bizarre, but I love the music, I must say. It really is catchy music. It's a sort of a pop rock kind of sound, with a couple of maybe ballad-sounding songs in there, but mostly it's really catchy pop rock music. And there's one song in particular that it's the worst earworm I've ever had. I listened to the soundtrack before I saw the show on my home, and this one song kept repeating in my head for months. And now that I've seen the show, I have maybe three or four that just keep repeating in my head. It's very catchy, but it's sort of bizarre. It's sort of, I keep describing it as if you take Dear Evan Hansen, and you mix it with Little Shop of Horror, you get Seymour Hill. So it's like the story is about these kids, these two kids in particular, two boys who are in high school, and they're really nerdy and not popular, and they really, the high school is just really hard for them, and they play video games together, and they have each other, they have this friendship with each other, but they're bullied at school, and the girls that they like are not interested in them because they're the popular girls, whatever. And it turns out that there's this new thing called a SPLIP, which is a pill that you can take that has a computer chip in it. And when you ingest the pill, the computer makes its way to your brain, and it can talk to you in the form of sort of this icon person who is your SWIP, and they guide you as to how to be more chill or how to be cool. So this kid decides it's worth it, so he takes this SWIP, and his guide starts telling him how to be cool and how to be popular, and it isn't great advice. You know, it's interesting because when I was watching this, I wasn't really excited about the storyline because I didn't, you know, a lot of the advice that this guide is giving the young boy is to drop his uncool friend, you know, the one who's been his loyal friend all along, get rid of him because he's not cool. You know, don't go after the girl that you're really interested in. Go after the popular one who's willing to put out over here because that will make you popular. And, you know, the behavior issues there were kind of, I was thinking, I was bristling about that. I also was not too excited at first about the female characters, as they seem to be kind of, you know, they always are fairly not well-developed and only there as sexual people to bounce off of for the male lead character. So, but interestingly, I felt as it went on, I felt like there was a lot more depth there than I thought there was going to be, and that the message in the end is that those things are not good, you know, that, you know, it really is more about being able to be yourself, being brave enough to be who you are. Friendship is really important, and sticking with the people who are loyal to you, and, you know, there really is a redeeming message that comes out of this whole kind of mess that these kids find themselves in. It was very interesting to me because there are a couple of times, and I've seen the show twice, and each time there were things that happened, like a character would just kind of walk across the stage or something, and this very young audience, I might say, one of the, definitely a lot of young people in the audience compared to most Broadway shows, the audience just roars. I mean, they just love it. They eat up thing, whatever it was that just happened. They love it, they laugh, they're excited by it, and I'm sitting there going, what the heck happened? So I'm not 12, and I'm not 14 or whatever, so there were parts of it like that, a few, not a lot, but I mean a few that I honestly have to admit age was a barrier for me. Obviously don't know what that was, but they certainly enjoyed it. But other than that, I would say I did enjoy it. And like I said, very, very good music. You know, interesting, like I said, it gets a little deeper than I gave it credit for when it first started. And I think it's the phenomenon of the season. It really is. You know, it's a hot ticket. It's very hard to get tickets. They were breaking all kinds of box office records at the theater. You know, how long it will run, I don't know. That'll be my question about this, because it really does appeal to a very younger audience. And I think a bunch of people will come see it because there is this cult following.
Right.
They're not all in, you know, it's across the country. This will have a great touring life. This will play at theaters across America because there is a definite market for it. These kids love it, and they will come buy tickets to it. Whether they will all make a trip to New York to see it is the question. So you'll see this run for a while, and be this season and next, and then we'll see. You know, is it the next Hamilton? That's the question. I keep hearing that, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's appeal to an older audience, but we'll see. the new thing, and you'll definitely see this nominated for Tony Awards. I'd be very surprised if it's not nominated for Best Musical. They'll want to have the ratings on the Tony Awards. People tune in because Be More Chill will be performing something on the Tony.
Oh, that's so funny. That's so funny. Believe it or not, we're getting close here to the end, but I wanted to ask you something that I'm puzzled by. Is it true, the Tony Award-winning musical, the band's visit is closing?
Yes, it is. I believe April 7th, if I'm not mistaken, but early April.
Why in the world? The Tony Award-winning. What happened?
I don't think anything really happened. I think it had its run. It's a different kind of a musical. I would be surprised if that ran for years and years and years, just because it's not your typical Broadway musical. I think it had an extra life by being able to go to Broadway. It started off Broadway, and I think that was kind of where it found its home. But it was so loved that they went ahead and put it on Broadway, and it won the Tony Award. But I think that's also going to have a huge touring life. As far as I know, it's already on tour coming like next year to a lot of performing centers. So I think it'll build audience there. I think it's just run its course on Broadway.
Oh, okay. I was just curious about that. I know it's an adaptation from a film, because it originally started as a film, but I was just kind of surprised, and gosh, I never got tickets. So anyway, and I know, yeah, I know that Tony Shalhoub had, left, and then he was planning to come back, but so much for that, you know, because we've talked before how much we're fans of his work.
Right.
Yeah, I can't believe it's our time is gone. It's crazy, but what's really critical is that the listeners, because now you got to come back and tell us about the shows that are coming in the end of April, so that you're going to see, right? And you have to come back sooner, so so we can find out what else is coming. For the listeners, where can they follow and support your excellent work?
On the site Reflections in the Light.
And, of course, very simply, I'm going to have the links, and also to find you on social media in my after show, which is now on the live show page. Just go to AudreyRusso.com, click on the honor button, and right under the show description, you'll find those links so that you can follow. Yep. You won't miss a thing. Yes, go ahead.
I was going to say, that's great. Thank you for doing that.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. And, of course, listeners, just, you know, those links will be there for an entire week. So you don't have to run after the show to look for them. They'll be there for a week for you to get and save for the future. You make sure you bookmark them so you know what's going on, because Lauren gives the best. And I'm not blowing sunshine. I'm telling the truth. She gives the best critiques of these shows. So, Lauren, thanks so much again for you doing all that arduous work for us, weeding through the theater to find out the best and the rest for us. So we look forward to your return to the show, and it's going to be soon, I hope. Until then, may God bless you, your work, and may God save America. Bye for now. Thanks.